Everyone, glad you can make it this morning. It's 8:30 on Wednesday, mid-tech ed. You might be wondering, hey, Microsoft guy in a suit on stage, what's going on? This actually isn't a suit, it's a tux. I ruined my khaki pants on the trip I was on before this, and the only spare pants I had were the tux pants. So I decided I'd just throw on the whole outfit for the presentation this morning. But I'm going to take off the jacket for the rest of the presentation, just to be a little more comfortable. So this morning, you're in room North 320E for creating robust, maintainable coded UI tests with Visual Studio 2012. One of the negative pieces of feedback this session's received in the past is it didn't go deep enough. Brian, who's one of the guys that normally gives this talk, asked me if I would step in and give the talk, and I said, sure. I happen to own the engine encoded UI test, so one thing that's not off limits is any question about what happens in encoded UI test. I can go as deep as you want. I own the core code. This is going to be a developer-focused session. If you're not a developer, feel free to stick around, but I won't be offended if you want to take off. Because it's going to be a lot of code, a lot of demos. So a little more housekeeping to get out of the way. There's some upcoming sessions later today. Session 411, which is testing using fakes in Visual Studio. My team actually at Microsoft just had a recent presentation on this, and I found it extremely interesting. If you don't have a session scheduled for, I believe, 1:30, I would suggest checking this one out. And then at 3 o'clock, session Dev 412, identifying and fixing performance issues with Visual Studio. I would definitely encourage you to check out that session as well. Performance is always interesting, whether you're a tester or a developer, and figuring out what tools in Visual Studio you can leverage to help identify your issues. And then finally, there's two hands-on labs. One is learning about exploratory testing with Microsoft Test Manager. I've recently learned about this myself, and I found it extremely interesting and pretty powerful if you do a lot of manual testing. And finally, the new unit testing and code clone capabilities. I actually don't know what this is inside Visual Studio, and I'm in the product team. So I may check out this hands-on lab later today just to see what it's all about. So I joined Microsoft in 2005 on the C# team. And in 2008, we had this photo taken. I don't know if it happens on your teams, but the last person to the picture has to sit front and center. And if you notice, you'll see Anders sitting there front and center. He was the last person at the photo. We all were sitting there waiting for him. If you're wondering where I am in the photo, there you go. Nice circle around my head. I worked as an SDET on the C# team for 5 years, owning the reference-based features, go to definition, find all references, other find features, the navigation drop-downs in the editor. And I also did a lot of stress and perf testing in Visual Studio 2010. My love and passion was always the automated testing tools and working with those. So in 2010, I switched to our internal engineering team. On this team, I helped create a team that was going to focus on internal test frameworks and our internal developers. And I ended up taking over what I call the RPF engine, and I'll get into that in a few minutes. It's the core components of coded UI test, which deals with finding windows, doing all the core primitives inside of it. And since my love and passion was around automated testing, this team was just a great fit. And right now I'm also working on getting coded UI test. We actually have a competing framework internally that uses the same engine I own. It's just a different framework that's built on top of it. And one of the big things I'm working on is getting Visual Studio internally to adopt coded UI test, which will turn into, I guess, improving the product and making it a lot better for you as our customers down the road. So I just want to get a quick show of hands. How many people in the audience have used or are using coded UI test today? Okay. And then how many of you are developers in the audience? Cool, good to see. As I said, it's going to be, I'm going to give a quick overview of coded UI tests, and then I'm going to get into the demos. One thing that I when I gave this presentation previously, piece of feedback I got was not to do a high-level overview, just to kind of dig in and get going, so that's what I'm going to do today. If you have, if you're lost or I'm going too fast, just get my attention and I can definitely explain some of what's going on. One thing I wouldn't mind asking now is, for those of you that have used Coded UI Test, are there things that you're really hoping that would be covered in this presentation today? Feel free to give me a second if anyone has anything they want, they're interested in Coded UI Test. If not, I will try to leave about 15 minutes at the end for additional Q&A, and I also have nothing going on the rest of today and tomorrow, so find me after the session if you want to sit down and talk about more details if I don't cover something that you are hoping to get answered in this session today. So we'll go into kind of the Coded UI Test fundamentals. It's made up of three core components. First is the recorder, second is the UI map, and third is the playback engine. The recorder is what most people use when they're doing Coded UI Test, because Coded UI Test was really focused on what I'd like to call the automation engineer and not so much the developer. They were trying to make it easy for someone to kind of to come in and record a scenario, store that in code, and then be able to play it back future iterations over and over again. The recorder is used, you can inspect your application to find out more details about different controls. You can use it to generate asserts. You can also use it to generate primitives, such as whether you're typing or clicking, moving the mouse. The UI map is essentially a representation of the recording actions and the UI tree. In 2012, they added a designer for this. In 2010, it used to just be an XML file that you could edit by hand. I think the designer's definitely an improvement. We still have some room to grow there, though, as well. Where I'm going to focus most of my time and what I own is the playback engine. And we're going to talk about building tests and configuring the playback engine for optimal test execution. The playback engine has essentially, as shown here, three main objectives. One is finding elements, two is inspecting those elements and retrieving data from them, and then three is executing primitives such as clicking, mouse, moving, typing. So, why use Coded UI Test? Well, there's four main reasons that I thought about when I was putting together this presentation. The first one was testing was an afterthought. You built an application, and people started to use it, and your developer base is your developer team is growing, and you want to avoid regressions. But since you didn't think about testing up front, maybe the application wasn't architected properly. This is a problem we have in Visual Studio today. Testing really kind of came in late, and we started looking at how we could use UI automation to exercise these end-to-end scenarios. And we built thousands, or if not hundreds of thousands, of tests internally on top of our UI framework. In reality, UI tests should essentially make up probably only about 20% of your test bed. You should focus on doing other unit testing and component level testing to exercise your product. Another big reason we use UI automation internally is to validate the accessibility layer. Coded UI Test is built on top of Microsoft accessibility technologies. And while it doesn't guarantee that your application's accessibility compliant, it does help to ensure that it's pretty darn close. There are tools out there, such as ACK Checker, that will help you kind of validate the accessibility layer of your product a little bit more. And using that tool along with Coded UI Test, your application should be in pretty good shape at the end. Another reason is localization. You could do static analysis on the resources to kind of ensure that the right resources are in the right place in the binaries. But one thing that's also interesting is running your tests using Coded UI Test or a UI framework and actually inspecting the values of the buttons, the list boxes, the labels on your controls to be sure that the right values are actually getting displayed in the proper places in your code. And finally, I don't like the term that I chose for this one, but I couldn't think of a better one when I was throwing this together. And I call it usability validation, which is your application, does your application actually work? Can it be used from the UI? An example of this is we replaced the add reference dialog in Visual Studio 2012. We released it as an extension for 2010 early on. But one of the problems when we added it to 2012 is the team that was doing this was trying some new test technologies, and they decided they didn't want to do any UI testing. They wanted to focus on some other component level testing that we've invested in internally. And what happened was all their tests were passing, and they said, oh yeah, let's integrate this to main so everyone can get the new UI. Well, they integrated to main, and what happened? The add reference dialog button didn't work. They could fire the event internally, and it would add the reference, but if you click the button, it did nothing. And had they used UI testing to validate just that core, can you add a reference scenario, problem would never happened, and we wouldn't have had the firestorm we had after that feature hit main. So this is a slide kind of showing the playback architecture. You might be wondering, what do these colors mean? Well, the red color is things that you and the audience are most likely interested in. This is what you're going to interact with when you're building coded UI tests. These are the controls. You're going to interact a little bit with the managed wrapper, but for the most part, it's the controls that you'll be interacting with. The green components are the managed components in the stack. The red ones are also managed. And the yellow components are essentially all the pieces that I own, and they're primarily native components. Given, I wanted to kind of go deep, I wanted to be sure that you guys had an understanding of what the architecture of RPF looks like. And we have a core engine which essentially has a pluggable model. Right now we have a Win32 plugin which is used for finding top-level windows. We have an MSA plugin, which is built on top of Microsoft's Active Accessibility technology, and then a managed UI automation plugin today. We also have a native UI automation plugin that's used for recording on Windows 8 today. If you did a recording session with essentially a tablet device, you can actually record manually with the recorder to select, see what's going on and pull that back to your main desktop. We'll likely be moving to a unified model later. We just didn't have time to do that this time. And then there's a series of web plugins. Today, there's a Firefox plugin for 3.5 and 3.6, which is old. And then an IE plugin, which supports IE10 and is fairly robust. One area we're investing very heavily in right now is the web space, so I would expect to see something in the future around web automation to really expand that and make it scale a lot better than what we do today. As I kind of covered earlier, the engine is generally used, is responsible for searching, matching, executing primitives, and then the plugins are about obtaining property values. They're responsible for the parent-child traversal, and they're also responsible for providing a clickable point. So if you have an element and you want to know how to click on it, and the interesting thing is in UIA, UIA provides a mechanism inside of it to give a clickable point. MSA, Win32, we have to do some work to make that happen. So that's pretty much it for slides. We're going to go into some demos now, which is where the fun stuff happens. So one new feature in 2012 is this ability to produce a rich log. Unfortunately, we haven't enabled a way to, I guess, make this easily accessible from the framework yet. So you have to go edit this qtagent.config file. And the two changes that you make are here, enable the HTML logger and enable snapshot info, which will enable screenshots to be taken when primitives or other actions are happening. The other thing that I've enabled in this log is the QT trace level to level 4, which is for enable all the verbose logging. And we'll look at how this could be useful in a few minutes. And I've deployed this change already. You deploy it to program files, Microsoft Visual Studio 11, Common 7 IDE, which is where QT Agent 32 happens to live. So we're going to create a really quick, simple project here. So I'm creating a new coded UI test project. And we're going to look at the scenario of opening VS, starting VS, creating a project, building the project, validating the build succeeded, and then closing Visual Studio. So I'll go ahead and record this. And the recorder started. And I'll say start devemv. I'll go ahead and do file new. And we'll just do a simple console app here. It's taking it's inspecting everything, so when you bring up a lot of UI, it takes a minute. So we'll call this create project. And then what we want to do is go ahead and build this. Oops, I need to start recording again. So build solution. And we'll save that as build. What we want to do is validate that build succeeded. So we're going to take the inspectors tool. I'm going to highlight here on build succeeded. But we notice that the blue box is highlighting this whole area, not build succeeded that we care about. And if we go expand the assertion dialog, we can see that it's looking at the container, not the build succeeded part that we care about. So there's a little tool here we can drop down, and we'll move to the child to see what's going on here. And we find that there still looks like a potential bug here in the product in the way that it's displaying where the item is, but we're getting the right text. So we'll add an assertion here to say, yep, the build succeeded. And we'll generate that. And then we'll go ahead and close Visual Studio. And generate that. And we're done. And we can see that here our actions get created. Go look at the code in a minute. And what happens if we run this? They also broke in 2010 F5 and test projects. You have to use Control RT now. So I've pressed that. The new UI here is a little, there's a bar at the top that kind of says it's running. I hope we update this a little bit because it's not always clear that the tests are running as it was in the previous version. We see here that the test is running. I actually expect this test to fail. We'll see if it does or not. So it's likely the test is going to fail right here. And if we sit and wait for it, it's going to take a good 2 minutes or so to fail. And that's because of the default settings for playback. The Coder UI test team focused on the manual tester. So focused on essentially the manual tester or the automation engineer. And they wanted to make it so that if you recorded something and played it back, there's a lot of leeway if your application had performance issues or other problems. So they came up with what they think was a robust group of settings to ensure that the application would eventually succeed. And so one of the problems that some people see is that applications sometimes are slow because searches take forever. If we go ahead and look at the playback logs here, so this is the rich log, or this is the EQT log, trace log that gets generated where I entered 4 in the app.config. And if we go down here a ways, we can start to see where it's inspecting a whole bunch of elements and trying to initialize them. The other thing that Coder UI Test does is that it essentially does a breadth-first unlimited depth search for elements. So if it happens to generate an element that's 2 or 3 levels deep, and one of the sibling nodes of that element has a lot of other child elements at the same level, you may run into cases like this where it's just taking forever to search and find stuff because it's drilling into elements that really don't matter. So one thing I would do is come up with a bunch of settings that I think are appropriate. And if you're building tests, I would recommend using these settings. And these settings essentially end up restricting Coder UI Test down to from a 2-minute search down to a 3-second search. And essentially, it enables fast. Searches should fail fast. Coder UI Test will reattempt searches 3 times as well, in order to, if your UI hasn't popped up already. It also has a notion of what's called wait for ready. If your application is doing something in the UI thread, well, actually the UI thread, or you can configure it for all threads if you want to, but I would recommend using the UI thread only. It'll wait for up to 60 seconds if your application's busy doing something. I've also reduced that down to 1 second. And then there's a notion of smart match, which I'll get into in a little bit. I've also turned that off. And if we run our test, I guess I've also enabled match the hierarchy exactly. And I'll get into this in a few minutes as well. So we go ahead and run this test again. We should actually see it fail pretty quick because the Visual Studio project name is dynamic. Every time you create a new project, we change the title to Console Application 1, Console Application 2. And let's see what it's. But the interesting thing is these playback settings don't actually affect top-level windows. Coder UI Test has a completely separate search path for top-level windows. And it's essentially a 3-pass search. They first search for the exact match that you've sent, that you asked. If that doesn't work, then they do an exact match non-minimized windows first. If that doesn't work, then they do an exact match minimized windows. And if that doesn't work, then they do a smart match with minimized windows included. And smart match essentially takes, as can be seen here, smart match assumes that there's a delimiter in the middle of the string, the little dash, and it takes the left-hand side and the right-hand side and compares them to each other and calculates each score for every window that's currently open, and then it decides to choose the best one. And an example of this, if we go ahead and let's create a new. Test method here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to launch a test app. So I created this little test app, which is called Increment Name. So we see that the first launch, it's 1, and if I close that and launch it again, it's 2. And if we go ahead and run this test and just say, I want a win window and we're going to say that the search property name. Equals instance 2 dash increment name. Space it out. And we'll say find this window and highlight it. We'll go ahead and run this, and we should see that it'll find this window. Try that one more time. So we just run the test we care about. So we go ahead and found the window, no problem. Go ahead and close that, and let's launch this again, and we should see that this will fail. And here's the kind of an example of the new UI. I've told it to run test, and the only way I can tell that it's running test right now is that, A, the bar is gray, but it's sometimes gray anyway, but this turned to cancel. So I don't know if this test is, has this test run already in this run, or is it in the middle of running? So we see it looks like it found the window. And if we go ahead and take a look at the log here, so what we can see in the log is that I was looking for the pass. Yeah. So here's the first pass we're doing. For the top, because it's a top-level window, we're doing a search, a first pass, no smart match. We go ahead, we see that it doesn't find any technology element, failed to find it. It goes ahead and does a second pass and minimize windows. Once again, doesn't find it. And then we come down here to do smart match and the search, and it ends up finding the window. And so the top-level windows are these odd things in coded UI tests that the overall settings do not apply to when you're searching. They take a percentage of your time up, but they have fixed search time. So if you have a wrong top-level window query, you may see your application taking a while because it's going through these multiple searches. And especially if the timeout is the default timeout of 2 minutes, you could be sitting there for quite a while trying to find these top-level windows. So close this one down. If we go back and look at, I didn't want to close that project. Reopen this. So we go back and look at the project, this new project dialog that we were having a problem with earlier. And we look at the UI map that was generated when we did this recording. We'll see that the new project dialog has this UI item expander collection. And if we said go ahead and locate this control, it's going to search and it's not going to find it. And so we can go ahead and right-click on the UI map and edit with the builder to see if we can figure out what's going on here. And so if I take the inspector and I highlight on this this control over here, select one of them, we notice that I have a tree item here. And we can look at, we can go ahead and look at the tree in the expander, or in the inspector here. And if I start going, it's not letting me go up. Try this again. So yeah, if I start going up through my parents, we'll see that I get to the UI item expander. And this actually looks like it's a potential bug in the recorder. But if I go up again, what we're going to see happen is that it didn't go to the parent that's in the UI map tree here. It actually went to a different parent, which is the correct parent in the accessibility tree. And if we pull up Inspector, which is a tool that's, that comes in the Windows SDK for inspecting accessibility issues, and we go ahead and highlight on one of these items, we can see what the full tree looks like here in the accessibility tool. And we'll notice that the group here is the expander, and it's parenting this group under the new project window here, it's not that it's incorrect, but because it's six levels deep, when you do a search for that, it's going to search through all of these other controls here on top of it, which will make that fail or take a really long time. And this kind of gets back to when you're recording stuff, the recorder tries to do its best job, but if you want to actually write and build maintainable tests, I would encourage to write, essentially abstract away your application and build a layer on top of Coder UI tests that you would use to interact with your app. You can do this in the UI map, kind of as I started to do here in my project where I have a create project, a build. I'm not saying how to create the project. I'm not saying how to build. You could use APIs to do some of this stuff, because maybe all you care about is validating that you can build using the build menu today. You don't care about validating that you can create a project through the UI. And if in Visual Studio, one of the ways we do this internally at Microsoft is we use the DTE that's publicly exposed. And so no one starts Visual Studio by going and typing debm or going and finding the process. We essentially launch Visual Studio using the DTE, and then we'll create a project using the DTE. So we're minimizing where we're doing UI testing in the product and focusing on the scenarios that are core to your team. And this was, like, on the C# team, we owned all the C# projects. So we had to be able to create all these different projects and validate that the C# IntelliSense and the C# language service was running in all of them. And these optimizations definitely will help make your tests much faster if you have that API level exposed. And will also hopefully make them much more robust. One thing that, if we went and looked at the code here, we could go ahead and... this item expander. So we're creating a new item expander here, and we're looking for it in the new project dialog, and we're looking for an expander. One other thing that you could do, and I wish there was a global way of doing this encoded UI test, but when you're creating searches, if we made this a single depth search, so if we said search properties, UI test control, dot proper names, dot max depth. If we set this equal to 1, this will actually scope our search to a single depth search. And if we were to rerun this test, the test would fail extremely quickly because it's only going to be looking at, it will only go to the immediate child controls. And even if it does 3 searches, they'll still be extremely fast. And I would recommend when building out coded UI tests, focusing on essentially the hierarchy that your application has and really trying to scope your searches to a max depth of one or two, just to kind of increase the search performance that happens. So one, let's open up another project here. One thing that's difficult to, I guess, track down if you're an automation engineer, let's say that you have a new project and you want to automate the tooltip that comes up here. Well, if we open up Recorder, if we open Recorder and I try to use Inspector to find this thing, you're going to see that I can't do it. If I open up even Inspect 32, which is an accessibility tool, and I try to find this window, again, you'll see that I can't. It's essentially impossible to do. And let's say that you wanted to be able to debug this to understand what's going on and how you'd find this element. Well, trying to debug something like this on a single machine is extremely difficult, because the moment you bring this up and then you move away and you go back to your app to debug and you can't do, there's just nothing you can do to kind of inspect that. So one of the things that we take advantage of a lot internally at Microsoft when debugging complex UI is remote debugging. So I have a VM here with Visual Studio on it. I'm going to start VS and bring up a console app. And I'll just go ahead and type console here as well so I can be able to. And what we'll do here is I'll also start the remote debugger. The remote debugger is in the tools section of VS in the start menu. And because of a bug in the remote debugger, I have to run this as an admin or AltMS test won't start because it doesn't currently respect the current working directory. So I've started the remote debugger. I have my application up. And let's go ahead and build a quick test to validate that we can find this window. So what I've done in my project here already is I've configured it for remote debugging of UI. And if we look at the build output, I'm outputting it to essentially the root directory, the root drive remote demo. I've configured the build events to copy everything from my C remote demo to the remote machine that I'm working with, so that if I make any changes, I can just essentially F5, it'll copy it before I start debugging. And then I've configured the debugger to launch MS test, and then we're launching it in no isolation, so it won't spin up the Qt agent process. It's just going to launch everything within the MS test process in the app domain. And I tell it to launch my remote demo test container on this remote machine. So we can go ahead and what I want to do is mouse.move. And I believe this was like 180, 78380. So we'll just say we'll want to move the mouse to 178380. Actually, we'll move it away first, because if it happens to be there and we just move it over a little bit, then it won't, the UI won't pop up. Oh, it's a new point. So I'll set a breakpoint here. No, thank you. Pretty sure that builds. And if we run this, so we can see that the app started. We're in the debugger here. We'll bring up VS and see if I got these coordinates right or not. And it looks like maybe not. It's moving. So it looks like I went over it, but just a hair. Set a breakpoint here just so we can see where it stops. Still low. All right, there we go. So you can see that the UI stays up. I can sit here in my debugger, and I could execute another mouse move if I wanted to. But what we want to do is we want to figure out, okay, well, what is this control here? So unfortunately, you can't edit and continue. But what I'll do is use the UI test control factory. And we'll get an element from point here, and new point. And we'll say, go a little further left, and so this should essentially give us the element that we want. You can see that I'm fighting the mouse right now. I wasn't fast enough. Let's try this again. So I had a toolbox script, I don't know, it decided to disappear, that would essentially walk. What I would recommend doing is you find this element, you get the element that you're looking for, and what we can see is that it's a text view. And if I look at that text view, and I'm familiar with debugging inside and writing automation inside Visual Studio, I'm kind of curious, is this the text view that's the main editor text view, or is this the text view, or is this little window that's popping up having a text view? And so what I would recommend doing is basically taking this element, and if you started walking the parent, so if you said x equals x dot parent, we can go ahead and get the parent, and we can start walking up this chain to see, okay, what elements, this is, okay, we're in a list item now, so if we go ahead and walk up the parent again, we're in the quick, oh, it's a quick info item view, so this seems like we're in the right element, and you can go ahead and figure out what are those elements that you, what does that element tree look like for these, what does the element tree look like for these, I guess, pieces of transient UI that you can't, there's no way to record them. And remote debugging is extremely useful for doing this. As you can see, I've been playing with the debugger here. The window still exists. Go ahead and draw a highlight and see, okay, well, what element are we on? And okay, we found the right window. And then you can go ahead and build automation around these windows that are definitely very difficult to find on a single machine. So another problem that we have in Visual Studio when testing it is the idea of background things happening. So when we own this, in the C# project system, for instance, when you open a project, colorization appears to be, generally happens pretty quick in files. But in order, what happens behind the scenes is you open up a project file, it loads all the files, it parses them, it binds to them, and then it ends up eventually loading the colorization engine and colorizing. So if you open a huge file, it could take a while for that to happen. And if you're trying to test colorization in Visual Studio, it's difficult to do, and you end up running into all sorts of timing issues in the product. Another example of this would be the error list. If you open a large file that has a lot of coding errors in it, the error list may take a while to populate, and you might not know exactly how many errors you would expect to see in that error list. So I built a quick little app here to simulate the error list window. And if I go ahead and click populate list, we see that it populates pretty quickly. Though if I go ahead and say, let's enable a delay, and I click it, we're going to see that it starts to take a while to populate. And this is fine. It's happening on a background thread. The UI is still responsive. But you can see I can also enable this UI thread mode, which will do all the population on the UI thread. So if we take this, for instance, and do a quick recording on this app, be sure this is in normal. So all I really care about doing is recording and clicking this button. So we'll go ahead and do that. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to be able to assert that there's 25 items in this list at the end. But there's no way, if we look at the assertion dialog, we can look at individual items, we can look at the list, but there's just no way from the recorder tool to say, OK, I expect there to be 25 items. So we're not going to do an assertion here. And what we'll do is we'll go into the code. Sorry, I actually need to, it won't add the list automatically. I need to add that really quick. So we'll go back to this, go up to be sure we have the item list. And we'll go ahead and add that to our tree so I can access it. And we can go ahead in our code and say we assert r equal, there should be 25, this.uimap, that our window, we'll get the direct children, and we expect the count here to be 25. So if we go ahead and run this, playback settings in here to be sure it's run. Okay, it's starting to run. The demo gods must be against me. I have seen a few times where the startup seems to be slow, and I know someone was asking me about earlier before I started presenting about kind of coded UI tests being slow, so it's definitely something I plan to investigate to see what might be going on. Still doesn't make. Just debug this to be sure it's hitting the right code properly. And it's not MS test that's taking forever instead of code UI test. All right, it may have been MS test taking a while there, not coded UI test. So goes that works fine. If we go ahead and say let's make the delay enabled and use the UI thread, if we run this again, we'll end up seeing that let's just say this simulates a bug in our app, and we go ahead and run, and we'll see the app starts to block here. Code UI test should sit here and monitor the app and say, hey, you're blocking. I'm not going to do anything yet. But once the UI thread completes, then Code UI test says, OK, I can go ahead and inspect you again. And we see that the elements all passed. So one thing you could do, let's disable the UI thread, say, OK, our developer came in and fixed this bug, and now we're going to go run our coded UI test again, and I would expect this time for the test to fail because it won't wait for everything to complete. It shouldn't wait for it yet. So you go ahead and we get a failure. One of the common things people would do is they would put a sleep in here and say, okay, well, let's put a thread.sleep. And this seems to be taking, 20 seconds to complete. And okay, that fixes my problem. But what happens if this list is a dynamic list? What if it's 2 items today and 100 items tomorrow? Then your thread.sleep definitely won't work. And we actually ban thread.sleep in all UI automation code inside Microsoft. We use FXCOP rules to reject check-ins if you're introducing thread.sleep, or even we'll also walk trees and see if you're calling something that calls thread.sleep eventually, because people try to hijack it. There's a couple of approved waiter methods that you can call, and they're approved because we can actually turn them off in automation runs completely. And so if we want to see if you're doing this in your code somewhere, we'll just say, okay, you can call these methods, but they're going to return immediately to see how robust and reliable your applications are. So one thing Microsoft or Visual Studio has is what we call code markers. And code markers were introduced for performance testing when we wanted to know exactly when things would start and things would stop. And teams fire code markers in all kinds of places, especially on background threads. So if we go look at this application, this populate list application, we can see that it's actually firing code markers. And this is a very simple implementation of code markers, just one to kind of, emphasize the point. But if view code, we go look here, we can see that Once the list is completely populated, we're going to fire this list populated code marker. So what you could do is in your test code, we can go ahead and reference this. Oh, dang it. And go reference this Microsoft.codemarkers DLL. BS, what are you doing? All right, let's try another instance of BS. She wants us. So this code markers DLL, I'll post the code for the simple code markers DLL on essentially the session content if you want to check it out to see. It's essentially a very simple implementation that uses WCF to message between applications. And so in your application, you can define an enum, as we've seen here, which is kind of the list populated. And in your code, we could change this to do, let's see if this works this time. There we go. What we do is figure out what this process name, a process ID is really quick. So we can say code marker that initialize client. Oh, I need an enum. You would likely share this enum across your applications. For the purpose of this demo, I'm just going to define one here. For 196. And what you could do here is say code marker dot wait for, and you still need to pick a reasonable amount of time that you want to wait. Actually, I don't need to do that. And so we'll say time span dot from seconds, and we'll wait up to 20 seconds, let's say. So you still need to pick a time that's reasonable for what you're performing. But with the code marker, it's not going to sleep for that entire time, the whole time. It's going to sleep until, well, it's going to pull for the code marker until it gets fired. And as soon as it gets fired, then it's going to continue on. And if you start seeing cases where your code marker is not firing, then that kind of gives you an idea, hey, I might need to dig into my application here to see what's going on and why it seems to be running so slow. So if we go ahead and run this one more time. Let's see if I typed all this right. We should see that it'll wait for these items to all populate. And actually the code, I think I put enough time on that. The list should all populate, the test should complete and should pass. And internally we have, when you call code markers that wait for, we can kind of throttle that because if we're running on check builds internally in VS, then we'll essentially take whatever time you think is reasonable and essentially add multipliers to it so we can wait for the product to be slower if we're doing code coverage runs or other type of instrumented runs inside VS. And I guess the one thing that I skipped earlier was showing the new the new report that we generate. And let me go to a previous result so I can show you this. Go ahead and run this, and then it'll just create a new report. And the report, as we'll see here in a minute, it's just a rich report with screenshots of what's happening whenever actions are performing, and gives you a rich call stack of when a failure happens. So this should fail. I guess in building, really in building robust, maintainable coded UI tests, it's as much about building, making the right changes in the application that you're testing, ensuring that the accessibility layers are available, that control IDs are set for controls, that automation IDs are set in WPF, that names are unique or control types are unique per parent-child element, and then taking advantage of those by, I guess, building rich code, building a rich abstraction layer in the test side and focusing on really the development side of testing and using the recorder and the UI test inspector as a tool to help you generate code and figure out which code to write, but not to use it as an end-all, be-all to write your tests. It's fine if you're going to write 10 or 15 tests, recording these tests, and then if they break, re-recording them over and over again as the product's changing makes sense. But we kind of saw that internally when if you build tests that are tightly coupled to the UI abstract, the UI layer directly, they're manipulating controls directly, then any time that control tree changes or something in the application, the behavior changes, you need to end up going and updating all of your tests instead of your abstraction layer built on top of coded UI test. Let's see if this came up this time. So yeah, here's the UI action log, and we can see it gives a kind of time of how long each thing took, what happened, what technologies used, the searches that were performed, and then a nice view of the call stack and everything there. So this is new in 2012, this log. It's also the same log that's used if you do recording if you do touch recording on tablet devices. They generate a very similar log here that I would definitely encourage you to enable if you're doing coded UI tests. Go back to. So just to, I guess, recap here, kind of went over the playback settings. I'm including the settings that I made here. In this presentation, I actually have it set at 10 seconds, but I really would recommend a lower threshold if possible to minimize searches that you're doing. And then match settings, ensuring that top-level windows use smart match because they're the ones that are dynamically changing, but don't set it for all windows in your controls. And then enable the match hierarchy, which will ensure that when query IDs are generated or searched for, it won't skip elements in the tree. And this will help find issues where you could see robustness or slowdowns in searching when running your applications. And then remote debugging, this kind of goes over enabling the remote debugger, enabling it as, I did enable as an admin if you're doing coded UI test remote debugging. Going ahead and configuring the build deployment. This is showing configuring, copying everything outside of, from the remote debug session, or from the local computer to the remote computer. And then configuring MS test as well as the parameters for execution. And then the smart waiters is using the code markers. You can also do a polling mechanism that I didn't end up showing, but you can essentially smart poll, which is doing searches, coming up with a query for what you're looking for, and then within a loop, essentially poll for the certain state to happen, and ensure that you're searching for minimum depth and small searches. And you're doing these quick searches to kind of say, hey, is my element available? Is my element available? If you don't happen to have the ability to add something like code markers into your code. And then in the end, really ensure your applications are testable. Use a testable automation stack or application stack. If you're using WPF, WinForms, Win32, you should be fine. In the future, if you're doing any web stuff, you should be fine. If you can do your testing, your web testing on IE, then you should be pretty darn good. If you're using ActiveX controls, they may or may not work, depending on what type of accessibility they've provided. As I said earlier, ensure controls have unique IDs and names. Use robust naming conventions across your application so it's easy to find stuff. And then if you're building custom WPF controls, use standard automation patterns. If you're using a tree view or you're building a custom tree view, ensure that it supports all the tree view patterns. And you can find these on MSDN if you look up essentially what the different control types. And an example of this is that the Visual Studio Solution Navigator or Solution Explorer in 2012 is actually a list view under the covers that's been customized to look like a tree view and act like a tree view. So they had to implement all of the custom tree view patterns for the list view. And they used the list view because they wanted to be able to virtualize elements in the tree so that they're not loading all of them all the time. But that process of customizing that control was definitely very painful early on in Visual Studio 2012. I guess finally, there's some additional resources with Soma's blog, Jason's blog. Check out Visual Studio on Facebook, Visual Studio on Twitter, and check out MyTechEd, Microsoft Learning. You've probably seen this slide a million times if you've been to other presentations. And finally, don't forget to complete an eval. You can enter to win on ComNet. And we have about 10 minutes left. If you're running MS TechEd, feel free to snap this and do your eval on your phone. But I'm happy to open it up to questions for the last 10 minutes of the session that we have. If not, feel free to head out. Yeah, go ahead. Come into the microphone just because it's getting recorded. So,
could you tell us if the UI test engine is callable from PowerShell?
Is it callable from PowerShell? I would imagine. I've never tried. You could probably make it work. You're going to have to do some special app domain stuff to get it to work. But you should be able to. You could make it work. It's just not going to be.
The UI automation, the low-level library, right? It's callable from PowerShell with some tweaks. So is it safe to assume that it would be pretty much the same?
It should be pretty close, I think.
Yeah?
I'm not overly familiar with PowerShell, so it would be interesting to kind of check it out to see what, sit down with you and figure out what you're doing exactly and see if there's something, you know, how can we help you out to solve your problem.
Okay. Also, could you describe how you actually run those tests once they're written, right? Which part of your integration, build integration or whatever, at which point you run it, how you, who takes care of the reports and et cetera, right?
So when do you run the coded UI tests, essentially?
Basically, you know, for example, us, right? We have those as a part of the build process, essentially, right?
Yep.
After the build, we deploy, then we test, then we get the reports, et cetera. How do you do this in Visual Studio?
So we have a breakdown of essentially check-in tests that are generally unit tests. There may be some functional tests in our check-in tests, but we generally don't run our UI automation tests as part of our build check-ins or our gated systems. But we will run them every day or multiple times a day, depending on the size of the team and the size of the tests, in kind of a post-build run. And that's what I would recommend. I wouldn't recommend running them as part of your check-in test, especially if you only have a few of them, then you can do it. You can write extremely robust tests in the end that won't. I run our tests as part of every check-in, but it's a post. It doesn't gate our check-ins. They're all post-check-in builds and runs that happen. And so we kick off these runs internally every check-in just to kind of be sure that that we can see where regressions are getting introduced.
So is somebody actually kicking off those UI test builds, or
it's automated? It's automated. We have an automated essentially internal run system that we're working on helping integrate into Team Lab, so you can take advantage of this if you're using TFS and the other tools in Visual Studio.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
No question. For performance reasons, I guess we found that Code UI test is definitely a bit slow, especially coming from a QTP background. It seems to be able to do things like getting to elements in a grid and setting their values much, much faster. So one of the things we've been doing to work around that is using the MSAA API directly. So
okay.
We have automation elements. And we find that there's no good way to, we'd like to be able to use the richer capabilities of the actual coded UI objects, but there's no good way to take a reference to an automation element and convert it into, say, a win button. Is that something that there is a way to do, we just haven't found? Or
I'll have to look. I know, so under, in the engine part, absolutely. How it's exposed on the managed part on top, I don't know if, so I don't own that code, so it's a little, I'm not as familiar on everywhere you can do, but it, I can look at a couple things. I have some ideas of where we might be able to do that in the code. I can look after the session if you want to come. I'll probably be in the Visual Studio booth.
Okay.
I can go look that up and see if there is a good way to do this or how I can recommend a way around that for you. I mean, using MSA, you will have the HWIN for the most of the stuff, except if you're getting child controls, then you're then you'll end up being broken.
Right. The other thing we have is a lot of custom controls in WinForms, and there aren't too many samples on how to add automation support to WinForms controls. Like, we have a custom tree view control. We wound up actually finding a sample and getting it working after probably a month and a half of effort.
Okay.
But do you know of any good samples on more than just the generic simple cases? I mean, we're talking complex controls like data grids. We want to add.
There's definitely a ton on, I guess, custom WPF controls, custom win forms controls. I'm trying to think if there's anything off the top of my head.
I haven't found
anything. Yeah, I haven't. I'll ping a couple people that internally. I can send an email after the session.
Okay.
But yeah, if you come find me after down the Visual Studio booth, I'd be happy to, you know, kind of look at this stuff with you and see if we can come up with a solution.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So question about the code markers.
Yep.
Is that something you can share with us?
I'm going to post. Actually, I checked in my implementation, which is just a kind of an example of how you could do this. And I have it checked into my TFS preview account. I was I'm going to push it out to Codebox later today. I was traveling before this, and I didn't get a chance to push it out there. So I'll push it out to Codebox is our engine moment, Codeplex. And then I'll post the link on the session comments.
Okay.
Or content, so you guys can go
great.
Ahead and download it and play with it.
Be great, so we don't have to reinvent it.
Yeah, it's a simple implementation, but at least it'll give you an idea of.
Right.
And I'll put some other comments in it. The way it works internally is we have it implemented, but if you don't drop the DLL, no code markers fire. But in our test labs, we drop that DLL in there, and then code markers start firing in all of our test runs.
Right.
Just so we're not generating a ton of extra messages.
Right. So how does it work in a production code?
What's that?
In a production code, how does it not affect the production code?
It's there, but because the DLL doesn't exist, they essentially turn it into no-ops early on.
So it's kind of like code contracts that
yeah.
you can have it, but it's not doing anything?
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
I also had a question on that code marker. It seemed brittle to identify it by process ID.
So normally, Coder UI test actually doesn't expose a way to get a process ID from. I realized this as I was starting to build my demo. I'm like, why don't we expose that? So when I go back, that's one of the things I want to post on the UI test control and be sure that we add that. Because ideally, you should be able to bind to the window you care about, grab the process from it, and then bind. And we use the process ID because you could be, if there's multiple processes running with the same window, you want to be able to be sure you're talking to the right one. And process ID seemed to be a good way to kind of key off that. I mean, you could implement it however you wanted to, but for this implementation, I just use process ID. And internally, that's actually what we use for Visual Studio, but we have an easy way to obtain the process ID. There just wasn't a way in code, and I had another demo set up where I was using the get process ID from window handle call, but it wasn't in my, for some reason it didn't show up in my demo tool. I don't know where, it just disappeared. So I went the route of grabbing it manually just for the sake of time. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you have any examples of the automation engine kind of automating events in a web application? But right now we're using Selenium.
Yep.
To do our web application automation.
Yep. We support, I can show you a demo of web stuff if you want to stop by the booth later at Visual Studio. We do support it in IE, and we support play, or we support recording in IE and playback in IE, and we support playback in Firefox today, but we don't support anything else right now. The team is actively working on being able to support every browser out there, and they have a solution that they're experimenting with right now, but it definitely will not make the 2012 RTM cut. But that's not to say it doesn't ship as a feature pack or something else shortly thereafter. So.
Okay, so like for Selenium tests, we're able to see the results of those and
fix it. Okay. So, I mean, if you ran them under MS test, it's going to produce a giant results file. You could look at that results file, the TRX file, and parse it to put it into any system you want. That's actually we have a completely separate system internally for testing right now before TFS existed. And so that's what we actually do is all these coded UI tests or other tests that run using MS test, we actually parse the result log at the end to pull it back into our system that we're using. And it's a pretty easy file to parse to kind of get that content out. So I think this session should be wrapped up. We should be over time. But.
Our company is relatively new to UI testing, coded UI, UI automation. Do you guys have a list of best practices anywhere of what we can use in starting UI automation?
Best practices for starting new UI automation, you said?
Yeah, just had all those timeouts and stuff.
Yeah, if you search for if you actually just search for coded UI test on your favorite search engine, then there's a guy, Matthew Anaya, I think. I can't think how. And Gautam have posted a ton of resources on leveraging coded UI test and kind of the walkthroughs. And then there's Brian Keller's done a couple of videos on using coded UI test and kind of does a much higher level overview of like every single feature in the recorder and the inspector and how to use them, but not so much. And then Matthew and Gautam kind of get into more in-depth problems that you can deal with.
So you guys have tips and tricks, kind of like how you had those timeouts to make it go faster. Do you guys have a central location for that kind
of
stuff?
So there's some of that, but I don't think it's as centralized as it should be today. My team, on the internal team, we're going to start working really closely with the coded UI test team on a lot of other, on the new web stuff that they're doing and some other upcoming features. And we're trying to get coded UI test to really be adopted internally at Microsoft. And so I think through that, we're going to end up seeing a ton of content generated for our internal developers that we'll just end up pushing out to MSDN. So if it's not there today, I would expect to see as we start to ramp up on it internally, much more content to be generated.
All right, thanks.